I don't know what is your reaction when you read Matthew 25, 31 to 46, what we just read right now. But this is one of the passages that makes many Christians feel guilty. Don't you feel guilty when you read this? Or do you feel that you're good? Do you feel like you're a goat or a sheep? You know, this passage, again, better known as the goats and the sheep and the goats, is a passage that, for some people, I mean, people go to the extreme. Some people look at this passage as a list of to do, things that I have to do. Because deep inside, especially people like me, coming from a Catholic background, and I don't know if people that didn't grow up in the Catholic Church have this feeling, but we have this feeling, this idea that I need to do things to please God. I need to be able to serve the poor. I need to be able to go to the prison and see the people there. I need to give clothing to other people. I need to go to the branch, and I need to, you know, volunteer. I need to go to hospitals. And so there is deep inside us, there is something that still makes us want to earn our salvation, right? And so, sadly, this passage is also used as like a comparison chart to measure ourselves up in order to see who is doing more and who is doing less, and how I compare myself with other people. How, you know, based on again, on the things that they can do. So I just want to start this message today to make sure that we're going the right way. That we are saved by grace. Unconditional, underserved, overflowing grace. What happens is when you look at this passage, it seems like the judgment. That last day when we're going to be in front of God, we're going to be judged by the things that we did. Is it that correct or incorrect? Am I reading it right or not? It looks like you are not going to enter the kingdom because you didn't do anything for me. Right? And then, Lord, but we never saw you hungry. Well, if you didn't do it for these people, then you didn't do it for me. And so it looks like, and again, and it can be treated that way, that we see this passage and we understand the passage based on how we are performing as a Christian. How many things are we doing every day, every week? I don't know what kind of count that we have. And so we can easily fall in the trap of asking ourselves, am I serving enough? Am I doing enough? And so we kind of tend to create these mental checklists where then we're just trying to figure it out. Okay, so, you know, last month we did the food drive, you know, to support the branch, check. And then, I heard somebody was sick, and I better go have and check that one out. And then I'm going to the hospital, and then I marked it. And then to make sure that, people see what, and so I probably emailed, you know what, I went to visit such and such, because she's very sick, and she might need some visits, because she feels so lonely. And so we you kind of raise your chest. And so you got this, you know, this thing going on, and you're just trying to make it on your own. And it looks like when you look at the Bible and at this passage from a wrong perspective, you want to come to the wrong conclusion. And so I really believe, and if you don't listen to anything else the rest of this morning, that's okay. I just want you to remember this. I believe this passage is a description of a lifestyle. I don't think this is a list of the things that we Christians need to do. I don't think it's a comprehensive list. Do you think that everything just falls down to the poor and the sick, and the people in jail? What else is there? And the people are naked. Is that all the needs that people have? When you look at, we were studying not long ago the one another's. You know, all those, I think it's about 40, 39 of them, 40, or more than 40. It's a lot of one another, things that we're supposed to do. And so I don't think Matthew 25 in this passage covers all the things that we're supposed to be doing every day. So for me, this passage, and this is kind of what I want you to kind of get this morning, if possible, is that this is a lifestyle. This is a type of living that comes from the inside out. And it's not a checklist. And why I'm saying this, where do I see that? When you look at that passage, look at the reaction. So this is the last day. The Lord tells them, you know, you know, to the good ones, the sheep, you come over here. And then the righteous, so they're called the righteous. And so you want to be righteous. You want to be called the righteous, you know, the good one. Then they will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to eat or to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invited you in? And so when God is, you know, Lord is talking to them, they were not expecting to do things so God, the Lord will see them. They were not trying to seek the favor of the Lord. Do you know what I'm saying? They didn't even realize they were serving him. You know what I'm saying? And so it looks to me, based on what I read from these passages, that these people paid attention to very basic needs, mundane, things that we might think they're not important. And I just want you to think a little bit, and maybe I want to spoil your surprise, because you look at these people, they were surprised, right? What in the world? We never did that for you. I don't want to, but if you look back in your life, I just want you to think about your own life, and have you ever at work, and I hear all these stories, you know, a lot, have you ever embraced a co-worker, for example, and she's crying, her husband left her with two little babies, and she's completely a mess. She cannot even concentrate on work, and you came, or she came to you, and you hugged her, and you cried with her, and you talked to your friends, and it's something that you were not thinking, it's something that came out of this a specific need. You know what I'm saying? A specific situation. So when you look back into your life, and then you have this neighbor, and she has been your neighbor for 30 years, and her kids don't come around anymore. She hasn't had any visits, and you're always there. And you call her, and you're checking every day to make sure she's alive, because she's old and alone. And it's something that maybe you're not thinking about, because it's not about if I'm making a list. It's something that comes from your heart. It's a lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? And so sometimes we just, our minds don't work really, really well. But the list can go on and on. This friend of yours have two little babies, and she's trying to go to school and finish her GED. And you say, you don't have to pay for the babysitter. I'll take care of your two little boys. And you go and do what you have to do. And we can, again, I can go on and on and on. For the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years of your life, the many times you have taken care of somebody else. And maybe that wasn't in that list. But the point is not the list. The point is what makes you do things for others. It needs to be based on your love for them. You know what I'm saying? How much do we love it? When you look at especially Matthew, that's kind of the main, the basis of what we do. So these righteous individuals in the story, they pay attention to those little things. They were just always conscious. And so my point is, and if you don't listen, you don't hear anything else, it's okay. And I made this the beginning for that purpose. In case you fall asleep, then you can say, well, I learned something different or new. I don't know. Maybe you knew this before. But love is what makes us do what pleases God. It's nothing else. Just write that down somewhere in your Bible. Love is what makes us do what pleases God. And remember 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Remember what it says? If I gave everything I have to the poor, and if I give myself to be burned, but if I don't have love, it's just worthless. It's worthless. So I want to, this morning, to encourage my church, my brothers and sisters in this church, to stop making a list and to start just looking inside you. Because maybe if you believe, if you use that list as a chart, maybe you're looking at the wrong place. And you need to start looking at your heart and how important is people for you, to you. And so Jesus says in Matthew 22, 37 and 39, that's the greatest commandment, right? What is the greatest commandment? To do what? Love what? Love? No, everybody, once. One, two, three, love with all your heart. And love your neighbor. That's the Bible. That's the whole Bible. That's the purpose of this book. Love God. And why are we going to love God? Because he loved me first. And because of the love he gave you, he poured on you. And last Sunday we talked about that. He loved me so much. And he was willing to die for me. And so his love for me is so big. And now I have to love somebody else the way he loved me. And so the Bible, there's this whole book, is based on relationships. My relationship with God and my relationship with my neighbor. Not just the church people, but anyone else. If you look at the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan, that story came out of the question, who is my neighbor? And what happened in that story? This guy is walking and he sees somebody that has a need, right? He has a need. He's dying there. And he took care of that need. Was he thinking about a list of Matthew 25? Wasn't even written at that point. He just saw somebody that needed something. So I want to ask you this morning, and again, you can leave at 10 if you're ready to leave or now. Just think about that. Are we thinking about the least of these people? When I'm driving, when I'm going home, when I go to my neighborhood, when I'm at work, when I go to school, am I thinking about somebody else? Not in the sense of, again, trying to gain favor in the eyes of the Lord. It's like, are people important to me? You know what I'm saying? Are they important to me, their needs, their problems, or not? Or am I just living my life? I'm just thinking about my pimples and you know, my hair is a mess, and the whole thing I'm thinking is about me and me and me and me and me, and that's the problem. Or can I live a life where I'm trying to be aware of those little people around me that might need something from me? And that's kind of the basis of this message this morning. That I want to tell you, it's very easy, and you know I'm going to go to the other part, but it's really easy to bring some canned food. It's not really that hard. Oh yeah, we got two truck fulls of canned food for the branch. Oh yeah, what a beautiful deed. That's stuff that we don't even eat, right? Who eats that kind of stuff? I look at those. I don't need that stuff. I like the fresh cooked vegetables, don't you? The little salad that looks green and nice and put some stuff on top of it. A lot of ranch. Right? Nobody eats that stuff. But I was able to fulfill my duty, my responsibility with these people. No, you are not. You are not. Because that's something that anybody can do. And so God is not asking us to be a Christian. Is not, am I sending enough food to the branch? Am I giving enough clothing to Thrift Mart? That's not the problem. What God is trying to tell us in this book is that how important are people to you? And can you give them the greatest gift of all? And that's kind of where we need to kind of move. And so the title of this message is learning to give yourself into others people. It's not, people don't need your money. People don't need your food, your shoes, your ugly sweaters. They don't need that stuff. They need you, your hand, your support, your prayers, your friendship. And that's what we need to give. Maybe, you know, I guess we use those things to open up a conversation. I don't know. But that's not the end. And, you know, the problem that I have with all these ministries and things is just all about the stuff. And so you go and you're helping and people come and you put the food in there in the box and bring the chicken and the meat. And then people are so happy. There is no conversation. We don't know why these people are coming here. Are they just don't have a job? Is she a single mom? What's going on? We don't even ask those questions because we don't have time. There is 120 people outside waiting to get the food. So the whole thing is about the food. And Jesus said, I remember in a story, I'm probably jumping already all over the place. Yes, I'm jumping. I better stop. And before I jump, I just wanted to remember that what people need is us. It's you. It's not about the amount of food that we gave. And so we measure the success of a beginning giving ministry based on the numbers. How many people came, how many coats we gave, how many food we gave, how many tons. Who cares? If we were not able to talk to people and know their name and give them a hug, it's worthless. It's worthless. It doesn't do any good. And I'm going to show you at the end, if you don't leave at 10, that's what's happening. And so the idea is just to give yourself. And there is a church, there is an example, the Macedonian churches. The Bible says in 2 Corinthians 8:5, and they exceed our expectations. And we're talking about people that were really poor. I mean, they just went through a bad time where there was hunger and there was a lot going on in this part of the world at that time. And the churches needed to get money and help to send to Jerusalem. And then they say they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first. If you don't give yourself first, it's worthless what you're doing or what I'm doing. Because I need to give myself to the Lord first. My heart, my desires, my will, my problem, everything. I give myself to the Lord first. And they say, that's what Paul says here. And they exceeded our expectation. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord. And then by the will of God also to us. So I just want to tell you, it is very easy to give a check. Very easy. I went to Nicaragua not long ago. To you know, spend some time with our missionary there. He sent a letter to the elders, and I don't think I had the chance to read that to them. I told them about it, and the message was, you know, he wanted me to go back and teach. Not only that, you know, I went there and he gathered some of the ministers in the area and some of the people that might may become, you know, elders and deacons and whatever. So we got about 35 men, and so we, you know, we spent a whole Saturday, several hours. They didn't leave, so they were a good example to you. And so we had, and so the idea was, for, you know, for me to come back now, and they want to gather all the churches in one place, and they want me to go back and teach now, because they wanted me to go from church to church. I'm not going to, I don't have that kind of time. So you better gather in somewhere, and then I'll see. And so, yeah, totally. But one of the things that Ahenor says in that letter is, I'm glad that my relationship with Antioch is not a check. He said that you guys care for us, that you guys came down here and work alongside us to build these bathrooms and spend time here. And then you're coming back here to strengthen the church and to bring all these guys together and give them a little message. So he really loved the fact that we is more than a check. And I talked to him every week, and he sent me pictures, and I sent him pictures, and we sent messages, and that's what God wants us to do. It's a relationship. It's beautiful when you have a relationship with somebody else. It's not just, it's easy to send a check. Very impersonal. It doesn't cost much. And you know why? I'm going to tell you. The reason why people don't stop to ask the person at the pantry, the food pantry or whatever, you know, what's going on in your life, because it can get very messy. And we don't want to get messy. We don't have time to get messy. I got enough problems on my own to get in getting somebody else's business. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difference. That's the difference. So what I'm trying to say is we're not here. God didn't send us to save the world. He just wants you to pay attention to one person. Just one person. And you know what is the most successful way to grow a church? It's not to bring back, what was the guy that used to preach here? He's very famous. When he comes, everybody wants to come. What is his name? What is the name of that guy? You know who I'm talking about. Lever. Yeah. Oh, let's bring him back and we just pay him twice and the church is going to grow. Well, it might. It might, because some people come to get entertained. But what about if we, the whole church, I guess the adults, let's say we have 300 adults, and you just work and focus in one person, just one. I'm not asking you two or three, and I'm asking you in the next month, maybe in the next 12, 24 months, you just find someone that needs your help, one. And everybody does the same. We can double in 24 months like that, just by working with one person. But sometimes we think that, well, we need to hire this guy so he can make the church grow. We don't make the church grow. The Lord gives the increase. We just have to be what he wants us to be. Just be loving people. Just loving people. People that care about the needs of others. Am I preaching too hard? Am I being too, maybe, too much preaching? So people need more than a coat or a bag of groceries. They need Jesus. And so if we, whatever we're doing, I don't know what we're doing, we need to ask ourselves. And there is a very good book. I'm going to, you know, ask, where is Andrew? I don't know if Andrew is here. He doesn't like to listen to my sermon. Is Andrew here? He's gone, I'll tell you. But I think he's going to be in charge of doing groups in the fall. You know, a beautiful book to read is Toxic Charity. And a lot of the things that not what I've said so far, but a lot of the information that I gather in this sermon comes from that book, Toxic Charity, right? And it just helps us to understand that we need to, when we're helping, when we're doing and putting money into a ministry, into whatever we're doing, we need to ask ourselves, he says in the book, what outcomes will we actually like to see from our benevolence? So what is what we're trying to do when we're giving coats out, when we're giving food, when we're going to the mission field, whatever, when we're playing soccer out there with the kids, what we're trying to do with this? And then he said, and then begin to restructure our giving to produce those very results. So the things that we do where we put the money, we need to always be looking into the results that we want to, what are the things that we want to accomplish. It looks like when we're getting churches in general, I'm not talking about any of it, churches in general, when we get involved in ministries, it's about doing something, busy work. And so if we're doing busy work and we're, you know, bringing money and moving people, we believe that we're doing the work. But sometimes what's happening with the benevolence and with charity, with giving to the poor, is that nobody's, and that's kind of what the book says, nobody's looking into the results. There's no accountability. And we're talking about billions and trillions of money given out to many things, and we're not accomplishing anything. And that's kind of the premise of the book. And all, it's not all bad. He says, give us a lot of good ideas of the things that we need to do. And so, just to start closing, it's 9:57. This is from my personal book. This is not necessarily in the book, but I want to encourage not only the elders, but you, the members, people that are involved in different ministries, or people that are thinking about getting involved, is to start using a little bit of common sense. And there is a passage in John 6:26. Jesus answered, "Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill." And so you need to learn to, when it really bothers me. It's okay. Let's say somebody comes and they're looking for help. They're trying to take advantage of you, right? Do you think that happens? People are trying to take advantage of our, you know, benevolence or our good attitude. Okay. And so if somebody comes and asks you for whatever help and you're giving help and then they're just playing you, well, that's on them, right? I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. You know what is the problem? What bothers me? When churches and ministries, they realize people are taking advantage of them and they keep giving them stuff. And nobody stops. Like Jesus say, hey, you know, you need to stop. It's not about that. And that's kind of there is a lot of waste in the charity industry because people are not looking at those things. We're just giving and giving to whoever comes, and we're not even checking who they are and their attitudes and things like that. So we need to make sure, we need to pay attention to behaviors and attitudes and lies and all that kind of stuff. We see that in the office very, very often, people lying to you and trying to just take advantage of the system. And it's just becoming part of, now in America, part of what we do. We're just, instead of empowering people, we're disempowering them by just giving things out without even asking questions. So there's many things I can do. I want to start trying to close. The other thing is I want to remind you, there is another story in Matthew 25, and I'm going to try to comprise it, make it a little smaller, shorter. There is a story. Remember the story of the talents, right? Remember? So the Lord, you know, he said, he's wealthy, and I said, I'm going to give you talents. I'm going to give you five. I'm going to give you four. I'm going to give you three. I'm going to give you one, two, and one, or whatever the number is, okay? And so he's very smart. He know that not everybody has the same capacities and abilities and whatever. So he gave you something based on the abilities that you have. And what is he expecting? He goes away, right? What is he expecting when he comes back? What is he expecting? That's a question. Somebody, a brave man, what is he expecting? What is the Lord expecting from us? He's expecting a return, right? That he's going to give you gifts, and he's going to give you money, and he's going to, you're so smart, and he's going to give you talents, and he wants you to put them to use, because when he comes back, he wants to see what? Results. He wants to see a return. And we forget about that part. That we need to check and see if what we're doing is actually making any changes in people's lives. Or it's just all just the system of people. You know, you give a gift to someone the first time and they're very happy, right? And then you give it the second time, then there is an expectation. And then you do it the third or fourth time, and there is an entitlement. Oh boy, they go to the branch and there is no food. You will hear them. Man, I came all the way from there and there is not even food in this place. For goodness sakes. Because we're not working with people. We're not helping them. We're doing everything for them. And that's what happened in my country. And it's starting to happen in this country. We're just trying to fix people's lives. We're not helping them to get out of poverty. We think that by giving them money, they're going to get out of poverty. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I don't want to even start talking about socialism because I'm going to get kicked out of here even sooner than later. So to finish up, the Oath for Compassionate Service, and this is in the book. And again, I challenge you to read it. Toxic Charity, Robert Lupton is the name of the author. And that will be a good book for group discussions. And then they say, listen to this, never, never do for the poor what they have or could have the capacity to do for themselves. And sometimes you get involved with people, and that's even I just went through the training with Hope Clinic, and they say this, and they even put a little picture. Don't get in the mud with these people. Just help them to get out. Don't get in the mud with them. Help them to get out. So we're here to help people not to do things that they can do for themselves. And I remember my wife, Sarah, used to work in North Carolina helping people with financial problems. And it was a nonprofit. And I remember she coming stressed out. Man, these people, they remember the time, 2007-08, where people were losing their homes. They were trying to help them out. And she said, she was all stressed out because people were not bringing their papers. They just needed to bring papers and fill out forms to save their home. They were not even doing that. They were expecting her to fill them out. And she said, I'm not going to fill them out. And she told me, if you don't bring these forms and your paper, you're going to lose your house. That's on you. And one day she just said, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because she was more worried about people losing their home than they themselves. And that's not right. That's not a good thing to do. So never do anything for the poor or for anybody that they can do for themselves. Then they say, limit one-way giving. And that one-way giving means is when you're just, sometimes you can do a partnership, but just gift. Limit gift, one-way giving to emergency situations. Is strive to empower the poor through employment, lending, and investing. And I don't know how I'm going to have time probably to talk about that, but Haiti is an example of this. Let me move forward a little quick, and I'll come back to this. Haiti, for example, like 40 years, 4 decades prior to the earthquake in 2010, they said $8.3 billion in foreign aid went to Haiti, poured into that country. And then after those 40 years and $8.3 billion, the country was even poorer than before. But you know why? Because people stopped working. Because you know what? We're getting all this help. And we're getting all this food. And they're coming in containers and you know, oh my goodness. So they stop producing. They start contributing to society. They just become beggars. And then we had the earthquake in 2010. $9 billion came after that, and the situation is the same. Now, I'm going to tell you this, because I know we have a big James and Abigail in Haiti. Actually, what they're doing, they're practicing what this book says. They're helping with microloans. They're empowering people. They're working with them, help them to start a little business. And then when you do that, then you spend time with them, then you create a relationship. See how different it is than just giving them money back and forth, like Robin Hood. I'm still from the rich of America and give to the poor. Oh, that's beautiful in the paper, but doesn't work that way. And I want to say, look at my own country. And that was Chavez. He came saying, I'm going to work for the poor, and this government is going to give all the money to the poor. And yeah, he did. And look at my country. It's completely broke, completely broke. Because this is idea of, you know, and using all the oil and all the resources, and they never invested in anything, in anyone, but them. And that's kind of the problem. And so with our brothers there, James and Abigail, it's different. They're trying to take this advice. So strive to empower the poor through employment, lending, and investing. And this is what these guys are doing down there. Subordinate. And this, I want you guys to listen to this. Self-interest to the needs of those being served. Sometimes you want to start a ministry based on what you want to do. Do you think that's very common? Oh, I like to do this, and I like to do that. That's beautiful. Is that what people need? Is that what people are asking? And sometimes we don't even listen. That's what it says. You need to listen closely to those you seek to help. And so if we're serving the annual community, we need to look at and see what the community needs, not what you want to do. And sometimes we're doing things in the church because we haven't done it for 20 years. Well, that sounds great. But if we're not accomplishing anything, why are we continuing to do that? Well, because, you know, these people feel very comfortable doing it. Is it about the people feeling comfortable about doing it? Or about those who are trying to help and serve? It's just messed up. The whole thing, it sicks me, makes me sick in my stomach. Because we're not thinking about the neighbor. We're thinking about ourselves. And so we need to be made sure we don't do that. And above all, do not harm. The idea is to help, not to harm people. Not to start a sick relationship. Because the problem with this idea of giving to the poor, you're always, you know, usually it's a white person, right? It's a white person, not white, but white. You know, it comes with the money, and suddenly it comes, and it's Christmas, and all the white people came. And and you give him all the money. So the relationship is the powerful whites giving money to the poor, you know, Latin American kids in the Hispanic town. And it's, there is not relationship there. And there is a beautiful, I'm going to end up with that. There's a beautiful story in the book. The guy that wrote the book, he said, you know, he worked in Atlanta. And he said, I went to a family, a house, and I knew them through my ministry. And he knew some people that have money. And he said, you know, come, and they need guests and whatever. So it was the wife. It's an African-American community in Atlanta. So it's the wife and the husband and the, you know, several kids. So he came first, the guy, and talking to them. And then all of a sudden, oh, the white people are here. Woo! And so they came, and the kids are all excited. And when he looks around, the guy, the dad, he was gone. He disappeared. And so the mom is trying to, you know, oh, okay, welcome, and whatever. And they came, and the kids were so happy because somebody else, you know, Santa Claus came. And they get the. And so when he was trying to check out what happened with the father, he realized he felt humiliated that he was not able to provide for their own kids. And he had to leave. Because he saw the happiness of their kids, and he couldn't provide for that. And so that book teaches us how to change that. And maybe how you can help the dad and say, hey, I want you to spend a weekend working in my house. I'm going to give you some money, and then you're going to buy the toys for your kids. That's the right way to do it. So he comes with the toys, and it's my dad who is bringing the toys, not white rich man from the other side of town. You know what I'm saying? And so we got this. So when you have that difference in, well, I'm the giver and you're the one who receives, and I expect you to be happy, and because you're happy, now I'm happy. In this sick relationship, when we're just trying to see, hey, let's see how we can work it together. So I can help you to help your kids. And that's the right thing. So just think about, brothers and sisters, just to close, how can we, whatever we do, just do it with the intention always to serve those who have needs, but not for my own benefit. Not just to put it in my checklist, but for their benefit. And it maybe if you are afraid of getting your hands dirty, then there is a problem there. There is a problem. That's the problem. And you don't need to save the world, just one person at a time. Just one. And if everybody does that, oh my goodness, the difference that we can make in this community is going to be huge, right? Just one person at a time. One single mom at a time. One neighbor at a time. One co-worker at a time. You don't have to go and, sometimes we think helping, you know, others is just to go and start talking to the homeless on the corner. Well, that's not necessarily what you have to do. By the way, I don't support that, giving money to the homeless. If you want to help the homeless, help, send money to a shelter and help those who know how to help them. Because we continue giving money to the people on the corner, this place is going to be packed in the next 3 or 4 years. Because they're making a lot of money. Some of these guys are making a lot of money. So sometimes it's easier to beg on the corner because you want to make more money doing that. So don't do that if you can. If somebody's really thirsty and hungry and you see that they're starving, I haven't seen a one person in the U.S. starving. Maybe there is one. Help them out. And an emergency gift should be just one time. Don't make that a habit. If you want to help them, find them to find a job, do something else. But just giving money to people just to give money to people is not good stewardship of your resources or the church resources. And so I think that's that. I'm not going to continue. But thank you so much for your time. And again, this message was with the intention, number one, so you guys can understand that you probably are doing a lot more than you imagined before, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Because helping others and loving others and pouring yourself into other people should be your lifestyle. It is part of who you are. See how beautiful it is? That's the type of person I am. I just help people right and left because I love doing that, because I love people. Right? And you are not, stop with that stupid list. Get it out of your head. That doesn't even work that way. And just do it out of compassion and love for other people. And just be ready just to help one. Make a real relationship, strong relationship with one person. That's kind of what it counts. At the end of the day, relationship is what it counts. If you are involved in a ministry and you are not making any relationship, do something else. Just do something else. Because the gift that people need is Jesus Christ. Amen? Yes. And if we're not having that opportunity, then we need to do something else. I'm sorry. And people are probably going to get mad at me, but that's it. If we're not accomplishing what we're supposed to be accomplishing, what are we doing? Is my question. We need to rethink it and say, maybe I need to use my time in a better way. Because God is going to come and say, what did you do with the 5 talents I gave you? Oh, we put it in that ministry. And what was the result? What was the fruit? Because nobody's looking at the fruit. We're just looking at the busy work. And we need to change that. But thank you. I'm going to ask you to stand up, please. And one of our shepherds is going to come to bless you. And if you're visiting this morning, I want to tell you that Jesus loves you. That he wants to give you not what you want, but what you need. And you need him. You need a relationship with him. And so we're here to help you in that walk. We're here to help you if we can. And to my brothers and sisters, again, thank you for your heart, for your generosity. That's one of the biggest qualities of this church. And just continue to do that. And just, if we can, just do a little bit better. Amen? Amen?